Hello, this is Lois Pausch with the Vermilion County News for Friday, February the 21st. And I'll start with an article with the headline, Vibrant to Close its Maury Street Bank Branch. I'm sorry, Dateline Danville. Another business is closing along the Voorhees Street corridor. Vibrant Credit Union announced to members Wednesday it will close its 923 East Voorhees Street branch at Voorhees Street and Bowman Avenue effective March 13th. According to an email from Vibrant, the ease of use and services available on our mobile and online banking channels have given our members an even more convenient way to access their funds, while interactions via our website, mobile, and online banking have dramatically increased. We have seen a notable reduction in the use of some branch locations. According to Vibrant President and CEO Matt McCombs, we are really doing remodel work at our Gilbert branch to make it more member-friendly and handle the volume of both offices. All staff is retained and will be working from our Gilbert or Covington, Indiana offices. This allowed us to better leverage our people for time and attention to serve members. We will be selling the Voorhees building. Vibrant still has locations at 323 North Gilbert Street in Danville and 417 Liberty Street in Covington, Indiana. Vibrant, headquartered in Moline, serves the Quad Cities, Clinton, Geneseo, Westmont, DeKalb, Des Moines, Covington, and Danville markets. Vibrant has more than $800 million in assets with 15 locations and more than 50,000 members. It was in 2017 when First Illinois Credit Union merged with Vibrant. At that time, First Illinois officials said all 27 local employees were to keep their jobs and the two Danville buildings were to see remodels. It also was reported at that time that there were about 8,600 First Illinois Credit Union members living or working in Edgar, Clark, or Vermilion counties in Illinois and Fountain, Warren, and Vermilion counties in Indiana. First Illinois has been serving its local members since 1951. To reflect its expanded membership base, Vermilion County Credit Chapter Credit Union's name changed to First Illinois Credit Union in 1984. Other mergers with First Illinois included the L&N and C&EI Credit Union and Danville Holy Family Credit Union. The Covington, Indiana location opened in April 2014. And the next article has the headline, Looking Good at 40, Dateline Danville. Demolition of the concrete ice rink floor at David S. Palmer Arena is expected to start after the June 10 to 12 Danville District 118 school registration. Construction of the ice system replacement project is expected to continue through October. Arena General Manager Joe Dunnigan said the arena's new system should start making ice around October 8th in time for the Danville Dashers' new hockey season. For that four-month period, Dunnigan said the wheels already have been turning to find other events outside of the arena that could be part of and still bring in some revenue. In the 2 months Dunnigan has been in his new position, he's overseeing this major arena renovation, and he's also been trying to talk to talent managers and others about finding available arena dates for events. One such event he's excited about is the RZR Professional Bull Riding event on May 15th, 16th. He said the organizers will bring in 80 bulls to be kept at the Vermilion County Fairgrounds for the event. Tickets start at $20, with VIP tickets also available. Dunnigan said about his initial time as arena general manager, quote, it's a learning process. He said he's getting a feel for what the arena is all about. It's for the community, for the city, he said, about the arena developing positive things for the city. He's been given directives by the arena board members for what they want to accomplish, and he's talking to people in the community about partnerships, such as the Fisher Theater's Jason Rome. Dunnigan said sometimes he or Rome may be contacted by someone with an event that would be suited more to each other's facilities. That's when he can share that information with Rome and vice versa, Dunnigan said. He doesn't see it as competing with each other. I look at that as a group effort. We see it as complementing each other, he said, about bringing entertainment and other events to the area. He added the expected entertainment center at the casino also would be a partner, such as with sports events such as boxing and mixed martial arts. He said the arena will continue to have its regular annual events, including hockey games and community events such as the Festival of Trees and the Home and Living Expo, but he also wants to bring in different fun events such as inflatable and bounce houses in the arena for a small fee for children. The arena doesn't have the bumper cars anymore due to maintenance expense. Tonight has the return of the Extreme International Ice Racing at the arena, and Saturday's Dashers game is the popular First Responders Appreciation Night and also Mardi Gras night. When events are held back to back like this weekend, staff is working well into the night to make sure the ice and events arena are ready, Duncan said. Some of the other well-attended events at the arena, including wrestling and basketball tournaments and other community events. Meeting rooms continue to be used by groups such as with Vermilion Advantage starting to meet there, and for yoga, birthday parties, and other uses. The arena board hired Dunnigan after 20-year manager Peter Blackman resigned to become the Danville Library Foundation director. The arena at 100 West Main Street is celebrating its 40th year this year. It opened September 20th, 1980, as the Danville Civic Center. It was later named for Mayor David S. Palmer, who was instrumental in its development. The multi-purpose arena has a seating capacity of about 4,700 for concerts and 2,350 for sports events. In the last year, the arena's renovations have included an improved large meeting room and set of restrooms and a new roof. The arena also has a new scoreboard. Improvements have been thanks to $850,000 in state funding that had been earmarked as part of former Governor Pat Quinn's Illinois Jobs Now program to be used for arena building maintenance. The grant money has been on hold for several years, and was released in 2018. Dunnigan said some grant money remains. Additional renovations could include addressing another set of restrooms. Bids will be open next week for the new floor and ice-making machinery. Work will consist of demolition of existing concrete ice rink floor, excavation, refrigeration equipment, interior and underground piping, dasher board system, electrical and mechanical systems, painting, building components, controls, construction of new concrete ice rink floor, and other related items. That big project will be paid with $3 million bequeathed from Julius W. Hegler II. Dunnigan said the mechanical equipment has a life expectancy of 25 years, but is now 40 years old. It's time to replace it, he said, adding the maintenance staff helped extend the equipment's life by shutting it down and melting the ice each year. Some of the ice floor doesn't freeze as quickly anymore, he said. He said they also are looking into applying for Ameren Energy grant to upgrade lighting and save money on electricity. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Micah White, 40, of Aurora, who died on February 16, 2020. She was born in Danville, Illinois. Funeral service will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 29th, at Annunciation Church. Memorial visitation will be at 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday at the Dalyden Mortuary, 220 North Lake Street, Aurora, Illinois. And the next is for Gilbert, quote-unquote, Gibb Stock, 84, of Watseka, formerly East Lynn area dairy farmer and TSC Danville employee, died on Monday, February 17th. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, February 21st, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday at Apostolic Christian Church in Cisna Park, with visitation 1 hour before services. And the next is for Charles, quote-unquote Charlie Arnett, 65, of Ridge Farm, who died on Tuesday, February 18th. A memorial to celebrate Charlie's life will be held at a later time. He will be accorded cremation rites with assistance of Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown, 200 East West Street, Georgetown, Illinois, 61846. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given in Charlie's name to the Ridge Farm Public Library. And the next is for Wallace Wiley. After two successful bouts with cancer, God called one of his hardest fighters, Wallace Lee Wiley, home on February 13, 2020. A home-going celebration will commence at noon on February 22nd at New Life Church of Christ, 1419 North Bowman Avenue, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the time of the service. Officiating will be Pastor Thomas W. Miller, interment following after at Spring Hill Cemetery. And the next is for Philip Gordon Farnham II, 79 of Gilbertsville, Kentucky, formerly of Danville, Illinois, died on Tuesday, February 18, 2020. A graveside service will be at 1 p.m. Friday, February 21st at McDaniel Cemetery in Dexter, Kentucky, with the Reverend Charles LaChance officiating. Visitation will be 10:30 to 12:30 p.m. Friday, February 21st at Philbeck Camp Funeral Home of Milner and Orr. Expressions of sympathy can be made in memory of Philip G. Farnham to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 262 Danny Thomas Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105, or the Kentucky Sheriff's Boys and Girls Ranch, P.O. Box 57, Gilbertsville, Kentucky, 42044. And the next is for Richard Thornsboro. I guess I like that name. His name is Michael Wade Thornsboro of Westville, who died on February 12th. He was 73. A celebration of Mike's life will be Saturday, February 22nd at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Westville, 414 South State Street, Westville, 61883. Visitation will be 1 to 2 p.m. Memorial service at 2 p.m. The funeral and memorial services will be officiated by Mike's cousin, Reverend Bruce Thornsboro of West Lebanon Christian Church of West Lebanon, Indiana, and Father Michael Kondos of Three Hierarchs Greek Orthodox Church of Champaign. An additional prayer service will be at Sunset Memorial Park, officiated by Reverend Thornsboro and Father Kondos. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made in Mike's name to defray medical and other expenses or to the American Diabetes Association or the American Heart Association. And now I go back to the news, other news. And the first has DHS mural depicts new tech family. Dateline Danville, a large mural of a tree at Danville High School is encouraging new tech students to leave their mark on the school and the community. The idea for the tree mural took root in September and was painted by sophomores Rebecca Feuerborn, Brooke Barrett, and Karina Sauceda in the new tech hallway on the high school's third floor. Mr. Brett's talked about doing something that would make us more like a family, Rebecca said, referring to Assistant Principal Jacob Bretz, who is the new tech director. This is our new tech family tree. Brooke creatively painted the words new tech to appear as if they are carved in the tree's trunk, while Karina painted red apples to represent each one of the new tech teachers. Dozens of tree leaves in the form of green painted handprints were made by enrolled new tech students. We started in September, but it took a while to get everyone to do a handprint, Rebecca said. Brooke explained the process, saying, "We rolled the paint on their hands. It took 3 days to get everyone's handprint," Karina said. Brett said he is pleased with the results of the family tree project. "I like how it's inclusive and representative of everyone in the program," he said. "They did all of this. I just paid for the paint and the materials for them and got out of their way." New Tech is one of three academies offered at the high school, along with Freshman Academy and Viking Academy. New Tech accepts 60 incoming freshmen each year who must apply for the program. Brett said he is still accepting applications from eighth graders who are interested in the NUTEC program. What sets the NUTEC program apart from other academies is that it features project-based learning where students work collaboratively in the classroom. Students still take the core courses such as math, science, social studies, and English, but it's with the same eight NUTEC teachers who teach project-based learning. It allows us to build more of a community, Brett said, of the collaborative learning style. My job is to empower and give kids a voice. Some other components of NUTEC entail students giving presentations and solving problems as a group. We give them a problem up front and have them develop an action plan working collaboratively with other students, he said. I've seen freshmen who were uncomfortable giving their first presentation, but by the time they're seniors, they can really command a room, he said. In addition, NUTEC students are graded differently. They are expected to reflect on what they're working on and use critical thinking skills, he said. It's a different approach, but the kids like it, and I'm a firm believer in it. And now for the community briefs, and the first two are from Danville. And the first has the title, Nominations Sought. The Danville chapter of MBUCS is accepting nominations for its 87th annual First Citizen Award. The award goes to Danville area man or woman who has contributed significantly to the betterment of the community through a single or multiple projects. Mail nominations to MBUCS First Citizen, care of Natalia Bourne, P.O. Box 1095, Danville, Illinois, 61834, or email to msmssb14@gmail.com. The deadline for nominations is February 29th, 2020. And also from Danville, the note has the title, Library Lists Programs. The Danville Public Library's Writers Group brings together aspiring and accomplished writers of all levels to learn about writing and publishing. The group meets from 10 a.m. to noon in the second floor conference room for adults ages 18 and over. Also at 1 p.m. Saturday, Money Smart Week Essay Contest Writing Workshop continues. Children in grades 5 to 12 can write a rough draft in the children's program room. And the next one is from Westville and has the title Honors Night. The Westville Community Academic Foundation will honor Anthony, quote-unquote, Burr Brazos and Abigail Miller Recker during its first presentation at night at 6:30 p.m. today with a reception in the high school library. Brazos is being recognized for his dedication to the community, and Miller will receive the Legacy Award. Presentations will be made during halftime of the boys' basketball game. And the next is an editorial with the headline, Does Illinois Deserve More Influence on Presidential Races? There is nothing wrong with suggesting Illinois should be the first state to vote in presidential primaries. The idea is fine, just don't expect it to be adopted. Amid the fallout from the poorly handled Iowa caucuses earlier this month, national observers continue to question the emphasis on Iowa as a launching pad for presidential hopefuls. In addition to giving a significant amount of credence to the selections of a relative handful of Iowans, there is the valid criticism of how little the state's results would impact the actual national primary races because of the limited number of delegates afforded the state. If you're looking for a state whose people represent the diversity of America, look no further than Illinois. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker tweeted last week, it's time for the most representative state in the country to be the first in the nation. Whether Illinois is the most representative state is open to debate. An NPR study ranks Illinois at number one, followed by Kansas and Arizona. Make of that what you will. New Hampshire and Iowa, which since the 1970s have carried enormous weight in the election process, don't reflect the demographics or political diversity of the U.S. Certainly, there's a clear divide between urban and rural, and Illinois can stand in as the most representative of those voting blocks, which appear en masse throughout the country. But Illinois faces obstacles of both circumstance and its own doing. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin said he'd like to have the state involved early in the decision-making process, but Iowa and New Hampshire are determined to have the primary in 2 years in advance, if necessary, to always be first. We'll never, never, ever be the first in line. David Greising, president and CEO of the Better Government Association, brought up a more prescient point. The elephant in the room is the rampant corruption, he said. That's not the elephant in the room. That phrase indicates it's something that's obvious, but a topic people don't want to discuss. Illinois wishes corruption in its politics was the elephant in the room, but we can't escape the federal searches, charges, and resignations of our political leaders. Or maybe the simpler response to Rising is a sarcastic, "Oh, you think so?" Illinois isn't even showing it has the ability to keep its voting rolls clean. Non-citizens have been registered. Underage citizens have nearly been registered. Registrations of former inmates have been erroneously canceled. When you see a problem, there's nothing wrong with stepping up and offering an alternate solution. In a different world, Illinois would be a fine selection. In 2020, however, Illinois is having trouble enough handling who it is going to allow to vote. And that's from the Decatur Herald and Review on Monday. And the next is an opinion column with the headline, "Democrats Must Fix Today First." Like all candidates, Democrats focus their campaigns on what they will do if elected. Progressives often accuse Joe Biden in particular of wanting to take America back to the Barack Obama years. And it's true that Biden often portrays his candidacy as a restoration of the era in which he served as Obama's vice president. But that's not a bad stance for any of the Democrats to take. They and their followers must understand that to move forward, America must first move back. The next president must reverse much of the damage President Donald Trump has wrought. The work will be considerable. We must rejoin our Western allies in honoring international agreements that still make sense. That would include the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. It reduced sanctions on that country in return for its freezing its nuclear program. Not perfect, but it was working. After Trump broke the agreement, Iran said it was free to develop nuclear weapons. A nuclear-armed Iran would be a nightmare. Washington must rejoin civilization's fight against global warming. Trump has almost completed our removal from the Paris Climate Agreement. Our abandoning it marks a surrender to environmental catastrophe. Some countries are not cutting carbons as they should. America and its conscientious allies can pressure them only if they lead by example. Trump has shredded regulations curbing the release of planet-warming gases. Some actions were so perverse, weakening restrictions on methane gas emissions, for example, that even industries meant to benefit said they didn't want them. How is it that a beautiful and progressive nation would consent to be turned into a dump? Among Trump's 95 environmental rollbacks completed or in progress was a repeal of the limit on pollution thrown in rivers, lakes, streams, and wetlands that are connected to larger waterways covered by the Clean Water Act. He's weakening protections for migratory birds and endangered species. He's opening fabulous landscape to industry. The most recent outrage was a move to allow drilling and mining on land that was part of Utah's Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. New leadership must reverse the campaign to destroy the Affordable Care Act. Trump has already disabled some of the means for funding the ACA. The law must be strengthened, and then it can be expanded. The next president must turn off the administration's green light for predatory lenders and their disgraceful abuse of ordinary people. He or she could start by undoing scandalous changes in the student loan system. Bring back the norms of behavior expected of government leaders. Begin with the easy stuff. Stop bigoted attacks on racial and ethnic minorities. End the blatant self-dealing for personal enrichment, and restore the respect once extended to America's military leaders and diplomats. Some on the left have criticized the Obama presidency as a lost opportunity to push more progressive goals. Obama should have been tougher on Wall Street, they say, and should have pressed for a stronger government hand in health care. But Obama was plenty progressive given the awful hand he was dealt. He arrived in the middle of a crashing economy. With the financial system in near collapse, he couldn't risk bringing down what was still standing. The auto industry, meanwhile, was on the edge of bankruptcy. Obama's plate was full that he managed to push through health reforms. Bringing coverage to millions was no small feat, doubly so given the Republican opposition that vowed to make him fail. And so the future must start with an immense repair job. Starting a new Democratic administration, where 2016 left off, does not leave it in 2016. Once America gets back to some kind of stable normality, we can begin moving forward. And that's written by Firma Harrop. She's a syndicated columnist. And the next is a long opinion piece that I may not be able to finish, but I will start it anyway. It has the headline, Stresses Multiply for U.S. Clergy. Dateline New York. Greg Laurie is among America's most successful clergymen, senior pastor at a California megachurch, prolific author, host of a global radio program. Yet after a youthful colleague's suicide, his view of his vocation is unsparing. Pastors are people just like everyone else, Laurie said by email. We are broken people who live in a broken world. Sometimes we need help too. Laurie's 15,000-member Harvest Christian Fellowship, based in Riverside, California, was jolted in September by the death of Jared Wilson, a 30-year-old associate pastor. Wilson and his wife, parents of two sons, had founded an outreach group to help people coping with depression and suicidal thoughts. People may think that as pastors or spiritual leaders, we are somehow above the pain and struggles of everyday people, Laurie wrote after Wilson's death. We are the ones who are supposed to have all the answers, but we do not. There is similar introspection among clergy of many faiths across the United States as the age-old challenges of their ministries are deepened by a host of newly evolving stresses. Rabbis worry about protecting their congregations from anti-Semitic violence. Islamic chaplains counsel college students unnerved by anti-Muslim sentiments. A shortage of Catholic priests creates burdens for those who remain, even as their church's sex abuse crisis lowers morale. Worries for Protestant pastors range from crime and drug addiction in their communities to financial insecurity for their own families to social media invective that targets them personally. Adam Hertzman, who works for the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh, witnessed firsthand the emotional toll on his city's rabbis after the October 2018 massacre that killed 11 Jews at the Tree of Life Synagogue. Somehow, in the U.S., we expect our clergy to be superhuman when it comes to these things, and frankly, that's an unrealistic expectation, he said. They're human beings who are going to feel the same kind of fear, numbness, and depression that other people do. It's difficult to quantify the extent of clergy stress nationwide or denominationally, but a 2018 Gallup poll bears out the widely shared impression that clergy no longer enjoy the same public esteem as in the past. Only 30% of Americans rate members of the clergy highly for their honesty and ethics, the lowest rating in the 40 years Gallup has asked that question. Not very long ago, they were seen as pillars of the community, said Carl Weisner, senior director of Duke Divinity's Clergy Health Initiative. There has been some loss of status, and that does add to stretch. I'm sorry I've gotten to the end of my time. I look forward to reading with you again soon. This is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, February the 21st.